And Michael Cremo with us. We're going to take your phone calls as we continue talking with him about forbidden archaeology. Great subject. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Michael Cremo with us, of course. We'll get to your calls as well this entire hour with Michael Cremo. Michael, I guess we need to talk about the God possibilities as we were hinting on last hour. There's got to be this higher power, this something, whatever this force might be, that seems to have put all this together. I don't have the direct answer. I don't. I could take the religious view, and that makes it easy, but there's something else afoot.
Well, you know, I think we can look at it like this. We're all conscious persons, individuals. I'm conscious, you're conscious, I have my personality, you have your personality. So where did all these personalities come from? I think there has to be a source that is also individual, personal, and conscious. So you could call that God, that individual, personal, conscious self that is the source of an infinite number of individual, personal, conscious selves like ourselves. I think that's not too big of a leap to take. And it's something that I think we could all sense, you know, from our own being, that we're each little samples of God, like sparks from the original fire. That's the way I would see it. So if we want to know something about God, we can start by looking at ourselves. We're conscious, we're individual, we're persons. So ultimately, I think there is an individual, conscious, personal self that is the source of all the others and is sustaining them somehow or other.
Michael, do you get much support from other scientists?
A little bit. I'm going pretty much against the scientific mainstream these days, but there are some scientists who are a little bit open-minded and who are willing to listen to alternative ideas. You know, for example, later on this year, at the end of August, I'm going to Kyoto, Japan, for a meeting of the World Archaeological Congress, which is one of the world's leading international organizations of archaeologists. Every 4 years, they hold a big conference in a different country. And this year, it's going to be in Japan. So I proposed a paper about my work to this scientific congress, and they've accepted it. I noticed there was a section in the conference that was called Hidden Treasures in Museums. So I thought, well, let me tell these scientists about some of the things that are hidden, really hidden, the evidence for extreme human antiquity that is hidden in museum collections around the world. For example, the Phoebe Hearst Museum of Anthropology at the University of California at Berkeley. In the collection of that museum, not displayed to the public, but in the collection, are artifacts from the California gold mines that were discovered in the 19th century, and layers of rock that modern geologists tell us are about 50 million years old. So you've got evidence for a human presence going back 50 million years,
wow,
which is really quite astonishing, because most scientists today would say humans like us came into existence less than 200,000 years ago.
What do you think happened, though, Michael? Where did it all go? Where did they all go?
Well, I believe in reincarnation, so we may have been in previous reincarnations living at that time. So the soul doesn't end when the body ends. The soul keeps going from one body to another. So that's what I mean by there's an evolution of the soul that's going on, not so much the kind of evolution that Darwin was talking about. So I believe time is cyclical. Time goes in vast cycles. And we also get cycled through different kinds of bodies according to our karma or our level of awareness or consciousness.
Michael, as you look at all the things that have come down over all the years and everything you've investigated, what one thing stands out the most that just baffles you?
Well, the one thing that really stands out for me is the huge amount of evidence for extreme human antiquity. And, you know, we're not just talking about a few cases. You know, I wrote my original book, Forbidden Archaeology. It was 900 pages long. There are hundreds of cases of archaeological discoveries of human bones, human artifacts, and human footprints showing that humans like us have existed for vast periods of time on Earth. So to me, that is the most astonishing thing. And more cases come to my attention, and I'm collecting them all together for a new book that I'll call Forbidden Archaeology 2 or something like that. The evidence continues to come out, and I think that is the most astonishing thing that I've encountered. In one sense you could say, well, what difference does it make whether humans like us existed millions of years ago or only 200,000 years ago, as most scientists now accept? It does make a difference in this sense. Say if humans existed only slightly before 200,000 years ago, well, you could make some modification of the current theories of human origins that could accommodate that evidence. But if humans existed millions and millions, hundreds of millions, or tens of millions of years ago, it's not really so easy to modify the current theories. You have to come up with completely new understandings of human origins. And those new understandings are what are really important, because I think those new understandings are going to involve something other than blind material processes. They're going to involve non-material substances, like the idea of consciousness existing apart from matter. And this would result in a huge change in our whole intellectual and cultural and economic and political outlooks. Right now, everything is based on the idea that we're just machines made of molecules in competition with each other for survival. And this leads to all kinds of violence on all levels of human society. It leads to the degradation of the environment. It leads to economic inequalities on a huge scale that cause huge social and political problems. So if we had a different concept of human identity, if we understood we're not just machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival, but we're all beings of pure consciousness, all related to each other. No need to divide ourselves into competing and fighting groups. That would result in an entirely different kind of human civilization on this planet. And this was something I was talking about recently. I was invited by the government of Madhya Pradesh, which is a state in India, to speak at a conference they were holding in connection with an ancient spiritual festival.
They're into this, aren't they?
That takes place at a town called Ujjain in central India, where they bathe in the sacred river Shipra at an astrologically auspicious time. They've been doing this for thousands of years. Millions of people come. But the government of the state in India where this festival takes place wanted to have a conference in connection with this spiritual festival where scholars from around the world and throughout India would discuss topics related to human purpose and human values and things like that. So I was speaking about these things there, and you know, the Prime Minister of India was also a speaker at this conference. It was sort of like the equivalent of being asked to speak at a conference that was organized by, say, the Governor of California, and the President of the United States was also there. So it was really interesting to see that in some parts of the world there are governments that kind of take seriously this topic of science and spirituality and how they can cooperate for the benefit of human society. So it was quite an interesting experience for me to be able to talk about the sort of things that we're talking about on this show at a meeting organized by a government. So it's interesting to see that that can happen sometimes.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Leslie in Detroit, east of the Rockies, to get us started. Hi, Leslie.
How you doing? Okay. I lost track of what I was about to say, but he mentioned something about Neanderthal and the Cro-Magnon man and where they come from, okay? And he said something about the spirit and world, the different... What about this theory there's reptilian, because most of us modern people look reptilian. Would you agree to that? If you look at our features, we look reptilian, right?
Some people do.
Well,
go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, it's interesting. The ancient Sanskrit writings talk about a race of reptilian humanoid creatures called Nagas. So there are a lot of ancient wisdom traditions that talk about that. You know, ancient.
When you say that they breed it, since we look like this, that we come from the true human beings were Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal, but when they came, they breed it with our DNA and it made us. Would you think that?
Well, maybe not exactly in those terms. What I am saying is I do acknowledge the presence in the universe of intelligent beings of a reptilian kind, but I also think there are humans like us, various kinds of ape men, various kinds of extraterrestrial humanoid creatures and things of that sort. So I'd say that's part of the picture, reptilians, not the whole picture.
What do you think of the Zachariah Sitchin theory of the Anunnaki coming here from this extra planet and seeding humans?
The general principle of human-like creatures from extraterrestrial regions having something to do with human origins on this planet, that's something I agree with in principle. Maybe I would have some difference in terms of the exact timing of it and exactly what went on. For example, some of the supporters of that idea would say that humans like us were first produced on this planet 300,000 or 400,000 years ago when some extraterrestrial beings came and manipulated the DNA of the ape men who existed at that time. I wouldn't agree with that. The research that I've done shows that there's been a human presence on this planet going all the way back to the very beginnings of the history of life on Earth, but they were at that time seated on this planet by higher dimensional beings. So the basic concept
is correct.
There are extraterrestrial beings. They have something to do with our human presence on this planet. That's something I accept, but I might have different ideas about the timing and the ultimate purpose of it. I don't think it was necessarily to create a slave race, for example. But, that's in terms of the general concepts, yes, I agree with them.
Claudia in Joshua Tree, California. Hi, Claudia, go ahead.
Hi. I was thinking for a long time, I don't know much, but I read a lot, and Neanderthal and Homo sapiens, I think, were probably the same race. 250,000 years of winter is bound to change the body, you know, to fit in. My thoughts are wandering off here and there. And I just think they're the same race.
Yeah, it's interesting that you make that point. I was saying that a little bit earlier in the show. My ideas about the Neanderthals have changed since I first wrote my book, Forbidden Archaeology. In the original book, I made a big distinction between the Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. But now, after studying more and more and considering the new discoveries that are being made, I'm seeing that it's more reasonable to say that the Neanderthals are like Homo sapiens Neanderthalensis. In other words, they're a subspecies of Homo sapiens. They're another kind of Homo sapiens. It's not like an entirely different species, as most scientists used to believe and many still do.
Great work that you continue to do.
Point.
Michael, I've got a lot of websites for you. Do you have any specific one you'd like people to go to?
The starting place is mcremo.com, mcremo.com. That's my main website. It's got a travel diary on it, upcoming events and interviews and information about all of my books. And then from there, people can explore. We've got links to other websites.
Great. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls with the man, the forbidden archaeologist, Michael Cremo, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines next hour, right here on Coast to Coast AM. But we're going to come back in a moment with Michael Cremo and take final phone calls as well. I was looking at the seating chart at the theater in the St. Louis area for my June 18th event. Whoa, those seats are going fast. So there's still a few good ones left, but not many. So if you're in that greater St. Louis area, if you're in Illinois, if you want to come in from any place, just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Click the highlight reel. You'll see it right there, the June 18th event. It's going to be a fantastic live stage show. Really looking forward to that. And also in August, I'm going to be in Asheville, North Carolina, another major live event. Smaller theater, and you've got some good seats available right now because it's in August, August 27th. But you can get that information, too, at that same link at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Cremo with us. Michael, there are periodic devastations that have wiped out humanities, including, for example, the flood of Noah and episodes like that. Is that how we get these civilizations wiped out?
I do believe there have been periodic devastations that have affected the history of life on Earth. And, this has become even part of mainstream science. If you look at what paleontologists and geologists tell us about the long history of the Earth, they would say life began on Earth a couple billion years ago, and since that time, even according to modern paleontology, they say there have been six major extinction events that have occurred at intervals of several hundred million years. The last big extinction event being the one that wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. So I find it interesting that the ancient Sanskrit writings of India have a similar picture of the history of life on Earth. They also say that life began on Earth a couple billion years ago, not just with simple single-cell creatures, but with more advanced creatures, including human beings. And that after that beginning of life a couple billion years ago, there have been six extinction events, six major devastations that have taken place. So I think it's, you know, there's some interesting parallels between the ancient Sanskrit writings of India and what modern science tells us about the history of life on Earth, namely that it hasn't been a linear progression. There have been periodic huge devastations that have wiped out the Earth, after which the Earth has had to have been repopulated. Now, in my vision, that repopulation takes place from higher levels of the universe where there are intelligent beings who are looking over the whole situation, and they repopulate the Earth. It kind of reminds me of cloud computing, where, like, you might have all your programs and your pictures and your music up on the cloud so that if your device gets destroyed, you can download everything again when you get a new device. So I think that happens in the long history of life on Earth.
All right, back to the calls we go. On the international line, we've got Robert in Colombia. Welcome to the program. Hi, Robert.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good. Good to have you with us.
I was wondering about your guests, if you've seen any knowledge of any encryptions in these stalactites.
Ah, interesting question. Do we know if there's anything, I don't think they had writings in those days, Michael, but anything like that?
In the reports that have come out about the discoveries made in this cave, they do not mention inscriptions. What they do mention is that, you know, the stalagmites are arranged in circular patterns. So there, you could possibly look. I mean, this is an idea that just came to me from hearing the question. You could look at the overall pattern of the stalagmites as a kind of inscription.
Oh, that's true, too. That's true,
you know,
too.
That's something that might have to be looked into, that there might be some kind of representation intended by the arrangement of those stalagmites. Because there's maybe 400 pieces of stalagmite arranged in these circular patterns. So you could take that as a kind of large-scale inscription, but as far as the individual pieces of stalagmite having writing on them, that hasn't been mentioned. Maybe they do. I don't know if anybody's looked at it in those terms, but it's quite an interesting suggestion from the caller.
We've got Anonymous in Vermont, east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I like to make a statement or whatever. I did see a reptilian man. I looked in his eyes, and his eyes were slanted like a snake. And I always want to confirm what I see. Then I looked down on his arm where he had a long sleeve shirt on, and there was the scaly skin.
Who was the person?
I can't say, because that's why I'm coming.
That's why you're anonymous.
All right. But I'm telling you, they were out there. You know, I saw his eyes. Then I I cascaded my eyes down his shirt to his wrist, and there were the scales.
But generally, he looks human?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just like you or me.
And he talks?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
And all that?
Yes, sir.
Interesting take.
But they're out there. Believe me.
Different civilizations, Michael Cremo.
As I said before, I think reptilians are part of the picture. The ancient Sanskrit writings speak of 400,000 human-like species scattered across the cosmos, including Nagas, which are reptilian beings. So they're definitely part of the cosmic picture.
Kathy is in Olympia, Washington. Hi, Kathy. You're on with Michael Cremo on Coast to Coast.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about a couple of them. One of them is the Aborigines in Australia have developed, of course, the boomerang. And I was wondering if maybe the genetics behind them are Indian, because I have this theory about the possibility that the UFOs were actually created by man himself, and that they really aren't aliens, but that they are probably a product of Elijah, the prophet Elijah. He was probably a brilliant mathematician, sort of like that movie, the guy in The Man of Infinity, who had those fantastic theory, mathematical equations for black holes. And
Stephen Hawking.
He was in the movie. He was Indian. He was Raj somebody.
Ah, okay.
And they had a movie, an art house movie.
Yeah, his name was Ramanujan. He was
Indian mathematician. He was brilliant. And I got to thinking about it, and I remember seeing this program on the History Channel where they tried to find the lost tribes of Israel, and the last one they found was in Bombay, India or Mumbai. Now, he left. This man that they ran into said that Elijah left off of this cliff, and he brought out the shawl, the blue and white prayer shawl, and the Torah, and he said that this is where the prophet Elijah left, and that his vehicle left rail marks on this rock.
His vehicle.
Yes, and I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, now wait a minute. You know, I don't believe UFOs are from outer space. I think it'd be totally impossible.
Well, not if they travel with a different propulsion system.
Right, but, you know, a wheel within a wheel, I think that was another prophet.
Ezekiel.
Know. Yes, that was another one. And I think that these prophets were highly intelligent. They were probably geniuses. And I think that, you know, when he left off this rock, the Bible, according to the Bible, his son and his wife was saying goodbye to him, and the son, after the father left, he asked God for 3 times the power that his father had. And
well, let's get Michael's take on some of this. The Bible does depict things that could be construed as flying machines as well, Michael.
Yes, and if you look at various examples of Christian art or Judaic art, they contain depictions of such things. So it's something that we find in a cross-cultural manner, that a lot of the different ancient wisdom traditions have accounts of machines flying through the sky, whether we're talking about the Old Testament or the ancient Sanskrit writings of India or the accounts of other ancient wisdom traditions, the Sumerian text, you know, for example. They all tend to have descriptions of these things. And I don't think one thing rules out the other, that, you know, because like today we're producing missiles and satellites that go into outer space, but that doesn't mean there aren't extraterrestrial beings who are also producing them. So I don't think, to directly address the caller, that the one thing rules out the other. In other words, Ezekiel may have manifested a spacecraft,
mm-hmm.
if you want to look at it that way, but there may have been extraterrestrial or heavenly beings that also make use of them.
Michael, how tall, getting back to the Neanderthals for a moment, how tall were they? I've read where they were pretty short.
Yeah, that's what I've read. Although their brain size was larger, you know, their cranial capacity was, on the average, larger than modern humans. You know, so from what I've seen, you know, they were around 5 feet eight or 5 foot ten, something in that range, about my size, I guess.
Nothing wrong with that. Let's go back to some more calls. Skype is open, by the way, folks, at George97313. We go to Ohio. Adriano, first-time caller. Hello there.
Hi. Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. It's first-time caller, and I always listen to your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to talk about a experience I had a couple years ago.
Okay.
I'll never forget it, too. It was in November a couple years ago. I went to sleep after having trouble sleeping the whole night, tossing and turning. I saw, like, this, like, oval-faced, like, creature looking at me. And what was really weird, I did some research and study on it. While I was physically, like, laying in my bed, like, sleeping, this all took place in my bathroom. And I saw, like, this white oval-faced, like, demonic creature looking at me, like I said. And at the same time, it was, like, levitating me. And I was kind of, like, caught, like, okay, you know, what's going on here? Because, like when I finally went into a deep sleep after tossing and turning, you know, I kind of like was in limbo, and I noticed what was going on. And, you know, it like became pretty scary and apparent. And then like at the conclusion of this, like my body was like convulsing and tremoring as if like, you know, I was going through like electric shock therapy or something, you know, like
jeez.
My brain was like zapping with, electricity, and I'll never forget it too. And then finally, when I noticed what was going on, I like sleep hag or, I don't know, but I like turned on the lights and like, I laid in a fetal position, like the rest of the night, totally scared. And I called everybody, you know, like trying to look for answers and certain people.
How did they react to you?
Well, they thought I was crazy. They thought I was crazy.
Well, I to throw in a couple things. As I was mentioning earlier in the show, I believe in reincarnation, which means the soul goes from body to body to body, but the mind retains memories of past lives, and normally we don't have access to those memories, but sometimes they come out in dreams. So I think one possible source of dream imagery is past life experiences. And other sources could be astral projection, either projecting ourselves into some alternate reality or some creatures from alternate realities projecting themselves into our dream realities. So there can be a lot of different sources of, you know, dream imagery like that.
Michael, we have talked over the years about things that were left behind. I remember we talked about those little metallic balls that were found with kind of etchings on them way deep underground that there's no way they could have gotten there. There's no way. Mankind must be much older. You're probably on to something.
Well, I think I am. Of course, everybody's got to make up their own minds about these things, but I've tried to give people who have an inkling that that might be true some factual evidence to that's consistent with those kinds of ideas. And it's an idea that we find in most of the ancient wisdom traditions, namely that humans did not just recently appear on Earth. They go all the way back to the very beginnings of the history of life on Earth. So that's something. And I think the reason that that's important is we tend to set our values and goals based on our sense of identity. So, if we think, we're just, as most scientists now believe, just some evolved apes who just by some accident of evolution present here, then our values and goals tend to become extremely materialistic, and it leads to a lot of bad effects in life individually and collectively on this planet. But if we have this idea that we've been put here for a purpose, we're beings of pure consciousness from some other level of reality to which we're meant to return, I think we would structure our human civilization in an entirely different way that would be more respectful of all the forms of life on Earth, that would be taking into account that, the Earth's resources are there for all of us, not to be fought over and made the exclusive property of one group exploiting others. So I think it's not just a question of human antiquity, it's a question of human identity and purpose and values and goals.
I think so too. Michael, thank you for being on the program. Let's keep in touch and let's run into each other at some event someplace. Michael Cremo has been our guest. Up next, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, I would like your reaction to that story of the little 4-year-old boy and the gorilla that was shot to death in the Cincinnati Zoo.